Welcome to the December 22nd, 2018 session of TeamSpeak for HPSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S. This week I've been busy at work. It was getting grades in after and grading finals, so that kind of kept me busy. But I have a week off now, so hopefully I'll get some things done in the coming week, as soon as we get through Christmas. Have a little baking but between now and then. Anyway, next on the list, we have Henry, PA0HJA, shown as recording. Then we have Mike, AA8K, shown as Mike muted and recording. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.openhpsdr.org. Then we have Phil, VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, Dave. Morning, afternoon, evening all. This week I've been working on the FPGA code for Hermes for the envelope tracking. We need to make a few modifications to the code to enable us to be able to run pure signal when we are not amplitude modulating the RF that's driving the PA. And been a fairly difficult process. Also, the version of Quartus we have to use for the Hermes board is fairly old now, and over the years, Altera / Intel have improved the compile speeds of the compiler somewhat, but the old versions are still very slow, so progress has been rather slow. But nevertheless, had a couple of breakthroughs last night, which I'll talk to Warren about in a moment, but all in all, making good progress. I'm also holiday until I think it's the 2nd of January, so looking forward to actually spending a bit of time in the shack, getting on the air, and spending a lot of time down the beach. We've got some beautiful weather forecast for over the Christmas holidays, which would be nice. More on the envelope tracking code when have a chat with Warren in a moment. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And next on the list is Warren in R0V, and welcome back, Warren.
Thanks, Dave, and good day to everyone. And as Phil mentioned, we've been going back and forth a bit by email and have been doing a little bit of measurements and testing with he and Rudiger on some of the envelope tracking and EER kinds of code. So look forward to discussing that here in a little bit. However, there is another thing. I, even though I've been busy with relocation kinds of things, I was feeling the need to write some fresh code, and so I sort of made some time for that. And this goes back to some months ago. Scott WU2O proposed to me that we do a new integrated Vox and downward expander system. And he kind of enticed me into that by saying, well, we got all these other great audio tools now, like the, you know, the continuous frequency compressor and the phase rotator and the continuous frequency equalizer and the ALC and so on. And so now the weak link is the Vox and downward expander. So I eventually had to succumb to that and find some time to work on it. Anyway, with Scott's input, I finally wrote that code, and without going into too much detail, I mentioned that it has several new features like look ahead, so that part of the leading syllable doesn't get clipped off by the Vox operation. The Vox operates before that audio. And also it has things like a side channel trigger filter that can be used to restrict sounds that will trigger the Vox and therefore avoid some false triggers. And there's some extra controls exposed for customization and maybe a few other odds and ends there. This is integrated in Thetis, and Doug W5WC has graciously agreed to finish up some UI work and integrate the controls into the transmit profiles. And hopefully we'll have all that released in Thetis here in a few days. So I think that's it for the moment. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And next on the list is Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, nothing too much to report here. Good to hear from Warren and Philly. I was off this week and I seem to get sucked into year-end stuff and house stuff and only got Well, no real radio time, unfortunately. So, off for the next week and hope to play radio over that, a little bit over that time. So, back to you, Dave.
Yep, you had big plans for this week, although you did warn us that the house might take over. And next on the list, we have Bob, VE3GKM, shown as recording and away. So that brings us to the end of the list, and we're open for general discussion.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Just a comment on the Vox one. So my understanding is the feature is what I years ago we called anti-Vox, so that, for example, if you receive audio is being picked up for the microphone, that doesn't trigger the Vox. Is that what you've added?
No, that's actually not what has been requested, Phil. We could do something like that or attempt something like that, but this is actually more looking, it's creating two streams internally with a filter on one of them that is used for the trigger. And so, you restrict the range that will trigger the Vox to the audio range or to some portion of the audio range, and you avoid triggers from extraneous noises that don't fit that profile.
Okay. Oh, well, I know many, many years ago I designed a sideband transceiver, and you'd work fine the Vox if you're wearing headset, but otherwise you'd pick up the sound from the speaker and it would trip the Vox and just end up in an endless loop. So I just subtracted the receiver audio from the input going to the Vox trigger, and within reason, it would mean you could not have to wear headphones. You could use a speaker, and it wouldn't trip the Vox. So if you're looking at extending features a little bit, perhaps you'd like to consider that.
Yeah, I've had transceivers back in the old days that had that feature, and so I'm quite familiar with it. And it wouldn't be that hard to do. We can certainly attempt something like that. But I think probably a lot of the audio files that are concerned about the audio quality and the audio pipeline and so on actually use headphones these days, and so perhaps that isn't as much of a concern as it was back in the era that you're speaking of. And I do know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, thanks, Warren. Okay, I'm just moving on to envelope tracking. So the Prosos, I'm actually making quite good progress despite the infinite compile times, which I must admit I'd forgotten about being quite so long on the early code because of the slow performance of the compiler. Nevertheless, I get to do other things during the compile, I guess, now. So what I've tested is I've tried feeding the envelope data into the digital up converter that would be normally taking the IA, the transmit IMQ data. And as you showed in the graphs you sent me, and thank you very much indeed for that, that was a very useful analysis, that works fine. The other thing I did was I do have a interpolate by 5 sphere, which I use to take the envelope IMQ signals up from 48 kilohertz to 240 kilohertz before I generate the envelope in the FPGA. And that's so that we've got a sample rate which is consistent with what we need for pulse width modulator, which is going to be used to generate the envelope signal for the PA. And that's been working for a long time, so there's no real changes there. But my initial attempt at providing a pure signal feedback when there was no envelope modulation of the carrier was to simply duplicate the existing digital up converter and feed the envelope signal into it and then use that to be fed back as the pure signal feedback signal. And I had a huge amount of problems with that, mainly because by then the FPGA was, I think, 99% full, and closing timing was an absolute nightmare. And also, I did manage to close timing, but it didn't seem to work. I could all the waveforms looked okay. I could turn pure signal on and off, but it had absolutely no effect whatsoever. The peak detect value was absolutely perfect, so I was very puzzled as to why this wasn't working. Anyway, what I decided to do yesterday was build a version of Hermes, which is only for ET and EEI amplifiers, not attempt to try and switch between conventional amplifiers and pure signal or anything, just to really simplify the code so I can strip out a lot of the switching, which involved switching wide bandwidth, high data rate signals around to, A, try and ease the timing requirements in the FPGA, but secondly, simplify the design substantially. And whilst doing that, I realized that I have an interpolate by 5 via, which I use for chasing the envelope. So rather than fully duplicating the digital up converter just for the envelope signal for feeding back to pure signal, I could perhaps add interpolate by 512 CIC following the FIA, and that would give me the correct value of interpolation, and it would be much simpler in terms of the amount of FPGA resources I used. So anyway, I did that, and I fed back the signal and had a look using your expanded test code to look at RX4, and putting a two-tone test signal, I could see what was being fed back to pure signal was a two-tone test signal. It's absolutely fine, except it was on the wrong sideband. So somewhere in the code, I had IMQ swapped. So that explained why, I'd imagine that explained why previously pure signal wouldn't work. So anyway, I swapped the IMQ over, and that meant that the signal I was now receiving in the second receiver, which was the signal going into receiver 4, was absolutely fine. It was in synchronism in the frequency domain with what was coming out of the transmitter. And pure signal would work, but the levels I had were too high going into the CIC. I had to reduce the envelope signal down by about 60% before I overloaded the CIC. So I'm just, in fact, I'm just compiling code at the moment where I've attenuated the signal before it goes into the CIC filter. But running the envelope at about 50% of the normal value, what I was able to do was there was a peak value in the pure signal pop-up window, and I think it's normally runs at about 0.47 or 0.46. So I just manually edited that down to about 0.32, and lo and behold, pure signal works, and the correction looks great. I'm running on 6 meters, as you suggested, in order to, you know, give myself some decent IMD to try and correct, but it does actually work okay. And that is feeding the envelope signal into my new feedback path, but also into the normal transmit path. So quite good progress. I'm assuming playing with the peak detect value is not a good idea. So what I'm doing at the moment is I'm just running a compile for the next half day, where I've attenuated the data going into the CIC filter following the interpolating FIA, so that I can run the envelope at Unity, which will be very useful because otherwise the envelope's too small for Rudiger to use for driving his PWM. Hope that will make sense. Back to you, Warren.
Hi, Phil. Yeah, I followed almost everything there, and first of all, it sounds like you're making excellent progress, so I'm not sure there's much I can add there because it sounds like you pretty much have it all scoped out and you're making really good progress in spite of the long compile times. The other thing, by the way, I'm pleased to hear you're getting some time off from work that you'll be able to spend time in the shack and work on this and whatever, on the air or whatever. That's great, and just glad to see you get some time off. I know how busy that you have been lately. But, yeah, at the moment, I'm not sure I know exactly what to add there because it sounds like you have it pretty well all figured out and are making really good progress.
Yeah, I think up and when I dropped you an email and said, you know, could you please come up on TeamSpeak, it wasn't going too well. And it was really the IMQ having swapped around the wrong way, but also just trying to fit this slot into the FPGA was a problem. There's a huge amount of high bandwidth and high speed switching if we have to switch between normal mode and envelope tracking mode. And what I'm thinking is to make a version of Hermes which is dedicated for people who want to use envelope tracking or EER, rather than try and add it to the basic version and have the problems of trying to switch between the two modes. What do you think to that, Warren?
Well, I think that is certainly certainly a reasonable option. I mean, I suppose there could be someone who wants to run both, has both types of amplifiers, and is interested in doing both. But especially at this point in time, when we're just working on amplifier designs and working through everything, I think having a special version should not be an issue for people, and should probably speed our progress along.
Okay, I think when this eventually gets ported to Protocol 2 and Thetis, it'll be a lot simpler because there's access to the individual endpoints where the data comes from. So I think we could probably have versions which will switch between the two. But at the moment, as you say, it's for the experimenters, and having a special version where it's vastly simplified in terms of the amount of data that's got to be switched will make life so much easier for me, and we can worry about the general public perhaps a little bit later on. The other thought I had was the INQ data which we send for RF. So let's say we're in ET mode. We're sending, obviously, the envelope signal will be there, but there'll be no envelope-modulated carrier. So that INQ data is in a different time stream to the envelope data, which is in the receiver audio channel. I'm just wondering, I don't know how consistent the timing relations between those two channels will be, Warren, and I'm just wondering whether we should consider, with the dedicated ET mode, whether in the RF IQ channel we send an IQ pair of RF and then an IQ pair of envelope, IQ pair of RF, IQ pair of envelope, so they're actually synchronized in time. I guess it's really a matter of whether field signal can accommodate this, so interested in your comments on that.
Yeah, I think we have to do that, Phil. I think we have to send them in an interleave fashion so that they are synchronized. And if I followed all your comments, I think we're talking protocol 2. But in Thetis, I have already coded the interleaver, as I call it, that interleaves those values.
Yes, I'm aware of that for Protocol 2, but we haven't got that in Protocol 1, and I'm not sure whether it's going to be an issue or not. And that was my first thought, was that when I looked at the first had the code working, and I could see that everything looked fine, the peak level was fine, the waveforms looked okay, the feedback into the pure signal receiver looked okay, but applying pure signal had absolutely no effect whatsoever. And that was a thought I had, that maybe in Protocol 1 we haven't got adequate time synchronization. But anyway, look, I can play as we are. It may be that just the way that the protocol is done, the time delay between the RF and the envelope is not an issue, or maybe you can compensate for it. But just something we should bear in mind if I run up another problem.
Yeah, sure, yeah. We can talk about it if need be, but in terms of the protocol, I think in Protocol 1, and we're working on so many different things. Sometimes I need these things in front of me before I speak, but I think we do send packets where the audio and transmit IQ are interleaved, and so I think we are okay there. I don't think there's any particular problem with that, but if you run across anything, we can certainly find a way to deal with it.
Okay, the other thought I had is that the interpolating fear that takes the envelope signal and interpolates by a factor of five, because of the bandwidth requirements, there was no need, there is no compensation for CIC, because up till now there's been no need to have a CIC following it. But now there is. There's a interpolate by 512 CIC. I'm just a little bit concerned about whether between the interpolate by 5 and the CIC, I need to put another FIR, which compensates for the sine X over X response of the CIC filter.
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern. And, boy, it's been a while since I looked at this. I don't think the transmit CIC had too much curvature in it. And so I don't know how severe the problem will be, but I see your point, and I think that one is a valid concern.
Yeah, I haven't done the same. I haven't done it. I know the transmit one we're using does have CIC compensation in, but from memory, it wasn't much of a, you know, out at even in the tens of kilohertz, there wasn't much in the way of a roll off. But we're slightly higher now. I'm using the same order. I'm using a fourth order CIC, and it's a higher interpolation rate, so I'd expect the roll off to be more. But anyway, look, over the holiday, I can pop this into MATLAB and, you know, cascade the FIR and the CIC and do an overall frequency response. But anyway, it's you know, if that's the only problem we've got, then I'm going to be pretty happy.
Yeah, I would agree. That sounds like something that that can be dealt with, given a little bit of space in the FPGA. So, I definitely think it's worth looking at. Needs to be analyzed and understood, and see where we go from there.
The other thought was to add that at the moment, the CIC, the FIR that does the interpolation from 48K to 240K doesn't have any CIC compensation in it, but I was just wondering if it's dealing with the envelope, if I did actually do FIR compensation in there, what effect it would have on the envelope signal. But need a quiet room, a notepad, and a nice bottle of red to sort that one out.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. That would take a little bit of analysis to figure out. It would have some effect, but perhaps, and I'm just speaking here without really having analyzed this or thinking it through, perhaps Pure Signal would just go ahead and correct that. It requires more analysis.
Okay. Anyway, as I said, if that's the only issue we've got, then we're pretty close to the finish line. Okay. Thanks very much, Warren. Appreciate your comments there, and I was highly motivated to solve this during the Christmas break anyway, but having seen Rudiker's photo of his amplifier, my level of enthusiasm is through the roof now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He does such excellent work. I always enjoy his photos, because everything is just exquisite, you know. It's just amazingly well done.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I think I'm sure we'll crack this, and I'm sure you'll crack the hardware issues he's having. But the end result is going to be absolutely remarkable. So, no, very excited.
Absolutely, and I wish you the best as you work through that. I will be available by email or even to do a TeamSpeak session. At least until December 30th, and then at that point, I'm headed for warmer weather for a period of time. I'll still be available by email, though. So you know, as things come up or you need to want to discuss things, don't hesitate.
Okay, thanks, Warren. And again, thanks very much for the speed you did that testing for me. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem. You know, I used a sort of a weekend or Sunday project tool that I thought was, you know, something I was going to use once or twice, and I've probably used that thing 100 times for this sort of question or analysis, or maybe even more than 100. So some of these tools, they're more valuable than you realize sometimes when you create them.
Yeah, very nice. Well, both our expectations was that the waveforms were going to be identical, in fact, they were. But I was just concerned if there was an issue which we'd overlooked, then I'd be spending an awful lot of time unnecessary.
Yep, absolutely. I understand, and glad to be of assistance there.
Thanks, Warren. Bill, have you got your DS2118 Plus working? KD5 TFD, you about, Bill?
All right, this works if I'm on the right screen. Yeah, actually, while you guys were chatting there, I'm crawling under the table trying to figure out where the UPS is going and getting enough cable to run from the UPS to the storage. So we're not up yet, but we will be soon.
Okay. I think, as I mentioned during the week, that this new NAS box is almost a hobby rather than just a new device. But I did want to try something, Bill, and it was actually very successful. You can plug an RTL SDR dongle in the back, and then it'll do a search for all of the video channels, and then you can record straight off air. And I thought, well, that's a bit of fun, so I'll try it. And it actually works really well.
That's interesting. That probably wouldn't work for me, because I don't think those things know how to do the TV standard we have over here. But I guess you guys use DVB-T, don't you?
Yeah, Roger, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Linux under the covers on that thing, although I haven't actually dug into it enough to know for sure. But, yeah, the thing is really, I mean, it's, it's a NAS box. It's also, a 4-wax and a dessert topping.
It certainly is incredible, but works very nicely. I've now backed up my old storer, so everything's fine there. But it's now behaving, which it obviously would do. But it works very nicely. You can record directly to the hard drives directly off air via the SDR dongle, or you can actually send it over your network and then use VLC to watch, to subscribe to the stream and watch it on any PC on the network. So, no, interesting. I mean, it's not a feature I particularly want to use. I've got a PVR I can use that for anyway, but just the fact it was capable of doing it, I thought, would be a bit of fun to try.
Yeah, the one thing I want to do with mine is get it streaming to an NVIDIA Shield box out in the living room. So I do plan on trying out that. Although I have my own stuff for the recording. I'm just going to use the box for storage and retrieval.
Yeah, very nice. Anyway, Bill, thank you for doing the product evaluation. I appreciate it. Saved me a lot of time.
Yeah, well, I ran into we're trying to do a little RFI mitigation here. I couldn't figure out why one of my Wi-Fi networks was behaving so badly, and then I discovered that the AT&T box that terminates in the house, all of a sudden the Wi-Fi got turned on it somehow, so I'm trying to figure out how to get into it and turn off the damn Wi-Fi, or if it comes, we'll have to open the damn box and clip the bloody antenna.
Okay, you understood. Just one thing, if you are playing around with your the NAS box and you decide there's a really useful feature or something that really should be turned on, I'd appreciate if you'd let me know.
Yeah, will do. I need to look at mine to figure out how to do. I mean, I want to use it for A, backup, B, general storage. And like one of the backups I want to do is from a Mac, which I think requires sort of special thinking or something. You have to do a little bit more digging on that. And then the other thing, you didn't run into anything about encryption on it, did you?
Yeah, yes, I did. There's a really good YouTube video about how to turn the encryption on and how to use it.
Okay. How does it recover? How does it get keys when the power fails and it comes back up? Does somebody manually have to enter the keys before it'll come up?
Sorry, I didn't get that far into the video. Sorry, Bill.
Okay, that's the, I have a friend of mine who's interested in that answer, so, I gotta go figure that one out, but, if it somehow manages to get the keys itself before it comes up, that's not a good defense against, somebody stealing the damn box on me.
Yeah, understood. No, I really, I haven't got encryption, enabled at the moment, but no, that's a very good point. I need to have a look at that. But anyway, apart from that, again, thanks very much for doing the research, and I'm very, very pleased with it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it's working out. I got my UPS in, and I figured out where I found another corner under the desk I can stick that, and we're just getting things cabled up now, and I'll get her fired up.
With you, I mean, I assume your UPS has got a USB connector. Will that plug into the NAS drive so it knows when to shut down?
In theory, yes. Actually, the UPS I got has both the serial and the USB. It's got the client-side USB, the square connector. So I'm assuming that's just a straight USB serial port. And the DACO for the Synology says, well, you know, enable the USB thing and connect it by, or enable the UPS support and connect it by USB, and it should just work. So that's one of the things I got to go try out.
Okay, yeah, I need to do that. I just bought a pile of UPSs for work, so I'll probably just borrow one of those and see how it works. But okay, that'll work great. Thanks so much indeed, Bill. Thanks for your help, and yeah, if you wouldn't mind, certainly anything I think of interest, I'll pop to you. And if you wouldn't mind doing the same, that would be very useful. Thank you.
Yeah, that will aid in the discovery of this thing. It sure seems like it can do a lot. Hey, Dave, I sent you an email. If you get a chance to look at it, let me know if any of that looks familiar to you. Not quite sure what I want to do, if anything, on it.
I replied to your email already, so hopefully you have it by now.
Oh, well, let me go look. Okay, maybe we do need to change things up. Do you know how to change the what it's involved if we go change the database password on there?
I'm not completely sure. I created one recently on my other account, but I can't remember. You did it last time, so I don't know the best way to go about it.
Arg, I need to do screen recording of any time I play with this thing. Okay, well, if I change things up, I will send you a note in advance before I do it.
Well, I'm not... The only thing I was planning to do at any time was move the OpenHPSDR beta up so that it's visible on the download page, and I haven't done that yet, but I should.
Your SSH key's on there anyway, so you're not going to care if I change it.
It shouldn't.
Okay, well, I'll let you know if I do anything anyway.
Fine business. I also would like a postmortem to understand what you learned.
Yeah, if I do, I have a feeling that this is a red herring, and I actually have to go find an old backup. I will bet that all that stuff's been 777 for a while.
It is likely it is. I would have never thought of doing that, so I am very careful about that in most websites I work in.
Yeah, I think it may go back to a while back when we were actually hosting some spam for somebody.
Ah, yes.
At least that's my guess. I don't think we're hosting spam at the moment, so I think we're okay.
Well, another little task to do over the holidays.
Yeah, everything's expanding to take, you know, 2 times my estimates these days, it seems like.
Well, good luck. If you need anything from me, let me know.
Will do.
Warren, just another question on Pure Signal. In the advanced window, there's a window that says set peak, and that's currently set at 0.4072. Is it allowable for me to adjust that value, or does it have to stay at that value?
For you to adjust, you can adjust that value, and in fact, you could look at the get peak value and determine what to adjust it to so that it will work. Now, you know, ideally, it would be closer to one, but from a practical standpoint, you know, anything with a non-zero value in the first digit after the decimal point is probably acceptable.
Okay, thanks, Warren. And that value doesn't appear. For example, I changed it to 0.33 last night, but I've just started PowerSDR again and brought up Pure Signal Advanced Window, and it's back to 0.4072. So it is not saved?
No, it is not saved in the database. It is a hard value that's coded in there, and it's different for Thetis, by the way, because the P2 firmware returns a different value. I think it's 0.2899 or something like that in Thetis. It could be made into a value that's saved in the database. I guess my feeling was at the time that, you know, if somebody enters the wrong value in there, Pure Signal will never work again. And so I made it a hard-coded value rather than a value that was saved in the database.
No, that's fine. Okay. Well, I need to attenuate the signal going into the final CIC now, so you can run the envelope at Unity. Otherwise, it's going to cause a problem for Rudiger in terms of how many volts he's got to interpolate up to 100 volts. The other one is the issue with the phase gain and the blip as the envelope goes through zero. Any further thoughts on that?
Not yet. I think after looking at the waveforms, it becomes obvious what's happening there. And I think we're just going to have to come up with a different method, or we should come up with a different method for transferring the phase information from software to firmware. And I have not had an opportunity, you know, that's a thought exercise that could take some time. I think it's highly likely there is a viable solution, a better solution, but I have not had the opportunity to think through that at all.
Okay, thanks, Ron. Looking at it, I'm wondering whether what I'm seeing is the impulse response of the fear filter.
Well, you probably are on that phase signal. You probably are seeing some of that, because what happens when the envelope crosses zero is that you end up with discontinuities in the I and Q values, and so those discontinuities, and well, we'll call them discontinuities for now, but those are definitely going to trigger some overshoot and undershoot kinds of things happening.
Okay, for now, if I just drop the phase gain down to 0.8, then there's no overshoot on the scope and it works fine. So certainly for the time being, we can live with that. That's no problem.
Yeah, that's a sort of a workaround for now, where you avoid the worst of the symptoms of the problem. It doesn't solve the fundamental problem, but for now it evolves, or it sort of takes care of, as I said, the worst of the symptoms.
Okay, thanks, Ron.